I'm Brandi Cruz. This is Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. If you want to help us grow that mission, you can do so by becoming an Undivided subscriber on Patreon and Locals, patreon.com/undivided or brandicruz.locals.com. In doing so, like I said, not only are you helping to support this mission to give common sense a comeback in news and politics, but you also get an exclusive bonus episode just like this every single Wednesday. Speaking of subscribers, I do a monthly Q&A with Undivided subscribers at the end of every month. And so we did one last night. Had some technical snafus, but we got it done. And I had a couple questions about the topic I want to start the show with today. And I was just so riled up on the Q&A last night because it's just, you guys know one of my least favorite things is when politicians treat the public like they're stupid. And it happens way too often. And we have what I have to believe is one of the worst examples of that. So, and it comes from Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary. And honestly, I think this was the moment that the White House press corps turned on the Biden administration. I'll show you why in a sec. So, as you guys know, there was a congresswoman who was killed in a car accident this summer, Jackie Walorski. And, you know, at the time, the Biden administration put something out. I mean, it was, you know, it's not like it was a secret that she died in this awful accident. So President Biden was at an event when he called out for her, wondering if she was in the room.
Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here to help make this a reality.
Now, Biden is old. He's 79 years old. We know that Biden has some mental lapses at times, searches for words, struggles to know where he is, which I do think is a legitimate thing for the media to ask about. When it's the president of the United States and you have something like that happening with increased frequency, there are questions about what that makes the United States look like on the national stage, on the worldwide stage, and also about his fitness to continue to do the job. But, you know, that aside, I could forgive politicians for having a mental lapse from time to time or misspeaking from time to time. I misspeak from time to time. Not as much, I don't think, as the president, but again, we'll get to that in a moment. So had the White House come out immediately and been like, the president apologizes for this. Obviously, it was an error. Then I would have a lot more forgiveness for the president. I mean, and frankly, he should have apologized because that was probably, now it's gone viral, it's on the news. That's probably very disturbing for the congresswoman's family, hearing the president of the United States call out for her when she has passed away. So any self-respecting president would be like, oh gosh, we need to apologize for that. Or his staff would tell him, we need to issue an apology for that. Oh, no, not the Biden administration. Karine Jean-Pierre has her White House press briefing and is asked about this. And not by Peter Doocy, you know, trying to score political points or whatever they accuse Peter Doocy of doing. She was asked about it by ABC News. And when Karine Jean-Pierre failed to directly answer the question from ABC News and gave a complete bullshit answer, Politico, I believe it was, followed up to the question from ABC News. Watch the exchange.
The president appeared to look around the room for an audience member, a member of Congress who passed away last month. He seemed to indicate she might be in the room. What happened?
So the president was, as you all know, you guys were watching today's event, a very important event on food insecurity. The president was naming the congressional champions on this issue and was acknowledging her incredible work. He had already planned to welcome the congresswoman's family to the White House on Friday. There will be a bill signing in her honor this coming Friday. So, of course, she was on his mind. She was of top of mind for the president. He looks forward to discussing her remarkable legacy of public service with them when he sees her family this coming Friday.
He said, Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? She must not be here.
No, I totally understand. I just explained she was on top of mind. This wasn't what we were able to witness today and what the president was able to lift up at this conference, at this event, was how her focus on wanting to deal with, combat food insecurity in America. And this is something that he was lifting up and honoring. And again, he knows that he's going to see her family this coming Friday. There is a bill signing that's going to happen in renaming a VA clinic in Indiana after the late Congresswoman. He knows that he is going to see her family, and she was a top of mind.
If the late Congresswoman was top of mind for the president and her family was expected to be here and that's what he was thinking about, why was he looking for her? I'm not trying to be snarky here.
No, I mean, and I'm...
No, what you're saying and what he said there.
And again, I think people can understand. I think the American people out there who, you know, watch the briefing from time to time, maybe at this moment, will understand when someone is at top of mind. Again, I don't think it's all that unusual to have someone top of mind, especially as there's a big event, two big events today and also Friday, that is going to occur. And so he's going to see her family. They're going to honor her. They're going to celebrate her, and he will do a bill signing for this really critical, let's not forget, this critical, important issue for millions and millions of Americans across the country.
Sorry to have to do this, but I'm compelled to ask you to go one more time back to the question about Congresswoman Walorski.
I'm not sure why. Why one more time?
Frankly, honestly, I think the memory of the Congresswoman and history requires some clarity here. Can you explain where the mistake was made? Was the president confused? Was something written in the teleprompter that he didn't recognize? Can you just help us understand what happened?
I mean, you're jumping to a lot of conclusions. No, I hear you, Stephen. I'm answering the question that you're jumping to a lot of conclusions. I just answered the question. If that had been the case, I would have stated that, right? I would clearly have stated what you just laid out. What I had said is that she was on top of mind.
Would you be prepared to release the prepared remarks that the president had in teleprompter just so we could understand?
I'm not understanding why that would be necessary. We always share the remarks that the president had, even, you know, delivered. That's probably going to be up on the website. Not really sure what that has to do with anything. I just answered the question about her being on top of mind. I don't think that's unusual. I feel like many of us have gone through that particular time where someone is on top of mind and you call them out.
And I think we all totally get why she's top of mind. You've made that case pretty effectively.
Well, thank you.
I think the confusing part is why, if she and the family is top of mind, does the president think that she's living and in the room?
I don't find that confusing. I mean, I think many people can speak to sometimes when you have someone top of mind, they're top of mind, exactly that. That is not an unusual scenario there.
Corrine, I have John Lennon top of mind just about every day, but I'm not looking around for him anywhere.
When you sign a bill for John Lennon as president, then we can have this conversation.
Are you kidding me? Honestly. Are you joking? I've seen a lot of bullshit from that lectern. That's the worst thing I've ever seen. The gaslighting, the assumption that the reporters in the room are stupid, the people watching at home are stupid. And I was really proud of the press corps because after she blew off that question for a second time with a completely ridiculous answer that no one in the world would buy, they went after her.
Hey, go ahead. Go ahead.
Excuse me. There are
Americans are watching this that are having concerns. What do you say to that? This is a legitimate question. We need to have some answers.
At the end of the year, what can you tell us about
that? I'm sorry, somebody was yelling over you, so go ahead.
There are reports that Treasury Secretary Yellen is looking to leave.
It is not your turn to speak, and you're being rude to your colleagues, and let your colleague answer the question. Go ahead. Go ahead. No, you're yelling and over your colleague. So that is incredibly rude.
And you hear one of the reporters asking, why not just apologize? It's like, couldn't believe the way that she was trying to spin this. Why not just apologize, he's saying. And you have another reporter that you can hear kind of shouting, you know, these mental lapses are happening with increased frequency. And for Corrine Jean-Pierre, the level of disrespect. And you talk about, you know, Democrats, how they think Republicans are the party of lies, you know, because they've embraced the big lie of, you know, a stolen election. And you give an answer like that to a question that should be a no-brainer, to say the president misspoke and he apologizes to the family. And a good point that was brought up on the live Q&A last night with subscribers is, how are Americans supposed to believe anything that is said from that dais moving forward? If you can't be straightforward about something that's so obvious, if you have to bullshit to that extent, or if you choose to bullshit to that extent, why should Americans believe anything that she says ever again? I wouldn't. Certainly the media in the room has lost its patience with her, which should have happened a long time ago. This goes beyond just being bad at her job, which she is bad at her job. This is gaslighting to the extreme. And I've said this a million times on the local level. She's paid with taxpayer money. The taxpayers of this country pay her to stand up at that microphone and spew absolute nonsense. No one should be okay with that. I mean, the level of arrogance and deceit, I don't even know what to say about it. She should be fired. I mean, they won't fire her because she's doing exactly what the administration wants her to do. I mean, we talked on the podcast a few days ago about how Jen Psaki, you know, she stepped down from this role and then she moves over to MSNBC and all of a sudden she's talking poorly about President Biden, the president she was a mouthpiece for at all costs just a couple months prior. She was saying on MSNBC how if the election comes down to a referendum on the president, that Democrats will lose. So essentially saying that she doesn't think the president is doing very well when she backed up every single thing the president did. So Karine Jean-Pierre, I don't even know where to go with that. Every single person in the country who was watching that should be disgusted by it. And again, I feel so bad for the late Congresswoman's family, who not only had to watch the president call out for her in a room, which you could have forgiven had he apologized, but then had to watch the White House press secretary gaslight the public into thinking that she was, the Congresswoman was just top of mind, that he wasn't truly calling out for her in the room. Shame on these people. Shame on all of these people in that administration who are okay with putting this message forward to the public. There was a very interesting opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal about the Senate race in Washington State, which is now getting a lot of national attention between longtime Democratic Senator Patty Murray and Republican challenger Tiffany Smiley. We talked about some issues related to political ads on the show on Monday, where you've got, you know, the Seattle Times accusing Tiffany Smiley of fear-mongering by talking about crime in Seattle in her ad, but then completely ignoring Patty Murray fear-mongering over abortion by using a woman from Texas in her ad. So I've been critical as it is about the Seattle Times' coverage of this race. But this is a Wall Street Journal article, again, and it was an op-ed. And it talks about some really interesting stuff that's been happening behind the scenes related to two of Tiffany Smiley's political ads that have been out airing. And it has to do with trademarks. So in the Tiffany Smiley ad that we've been talking a lot about on the show, she's standing in front of a Starbucks that closed in Seattle over crime concerns. And you can see the Starbucks behind her, how it's, you know, clearly not operational. It's got graffiti all over it. Well, apparently Starbucks was not happy that Tiffany Smiley was standing in front of one of its stores, even though the store is closed, in her ad. And the Tiffany Smiley campaign, in a press release, said that they were sent a cease and desist letter from Starbucks. And the cease and desist letter accused her of essentially appropriating their logo and using a trademark in an unauthorized fashion for political purposes, for a political advantage. So here's the cease and desist letter. It says, Dear Miss Smiley, I write on behalf of Starbucks Corporation. I want to take this opportunity to reach out to you about the recent use of Starbucks intellectual property in an advertisement produced by Smiley for Washington and approved by you in support of your campaign for United States Senator. As you may know, Starbucks is the owner of numerous U.S. trademark and copyright registrations, as well as numerous worldwide registrations for the trademark Starbucks. Starbucks has invested a significant amount of time and money into the promotion of goods and services under the Starbucks brand. Your use of Starbucks intellectual property in an advertisement for your campaign harms Starbucks because it is likely to create an unfounded association in the minds of consumers between Starbucks and your campaign. Starbucks does not permit the use of its brand for political advertisements. Okay, with that statement from Starbucks in mind, let's watch the Tiffany Smiley ad in question again.
These doors are closed because it's too dangerous to ask employees to work here anymore. Think about that. For decades, Patty Murray has spearheaded reckless policies that lead to shortages, inflation, and so much crime that you can't even get a cup of coffee from the hometown shop on Capitol Hill, even if you could still afford it. 30 years in the Senate, and this is what she has to show for it? If she won't do the job, I will. I'm Tiffany Smiley, and I approve this message.
So you'll notice that nowhere in that ad does Tiffany Smiley say Starbucks. She's just referring to a coffee shop. There's only two places in this ad where Starbucks appears. One of those places is in the headline of the Seattle Times article that she shows on screen. And then I was watching and I thought, well, where is the trademark? You know, because it's not just their name being used in a news headline. Where is the trademark here? And I thought, well, maybe I'm missing a logo on the side of the building or that's still up on one of the doors. But I scanned. I was like, no, nothing there. And then you see off. I just have to laugh at these things. Off in the backside of the closed down building. The backwards Starbucks sign. Do you see it? So we're looking at the backside of it. It's barely legible. But I have to imagine that it's the only thing I can imagine that Starbucks is taking issue with. And that's what they say in the letter. They say, Starbucks therefore respectfully requests that you either, one, remove the advertisement from television and internet distribution, or edit the advertisement to remove any visible reference to Starbucks, such as the signage on the building in the advertisement, and remove any reference to the July 11th Seattle Times article regarding Starbucks. We request that you respond to this letter by September 30th, 2022. Okay. So going back to their line here, the core thesis of their argument is your use of Starbucks intellectual property in an advertisement for your campaign harms Starbucks because it is likely to create an unfounded association in the minds of consumers between Starbucks and your campaign. Does anyone listen to this ad and think, oh, Starbucks supports the Tiffany Smiley campaign?
So much crime that you can't even get a cup of coffee from the hometown shop on Capitol Hill, even if you could still afford it.
It doesn't, no, that argument just doesn't make any sense. Now look, if this is indeed a trademark infringement, every company has a right to protect its trademark. If this violated trademark laws for use of intellectual property, then, you know, the Smiley campaign needs to remove it. That's the bottom line. I mean, nobody should get exceptions for these kinds of things. But I will say the reference to Starbucks is so minuscule that I'm kind of surprised the company is bothering. And apparently they're not the only company that's bothering. Tiffany Smiley also released an ad called Game Day. Here is a portion of that ad.
Game day sure has changed. Joe Biden and Patty Murray are working overtime to make everything more expensive. And working families are feeling the squeeze. Hot dogs up 26%. Eggs almost 40%. Even beer.
Are you kidding me?
So what's wrong with that ad? Well, the ad shows her husband. He's just on screen for 2 seconds. And he's sitting on the couch in a football jersey.
Are you kidding me?
In the original ad, it was very apparent that it was a Seattle Seahawks jersey. You could see the little NFL logo. It was the Seahawks colors. But the Smiley campaign got a cease and desist letter from the Seahawks saying, hey, this is unauthorized use of the Seahawks trademark. So Tiffany Smiley's campaign went back and edited the jersey to make it all blue, get rid of the NFL logo, to try to make the Seahawks happy. But what's interesting about the Seahawks bothering to reach out to the Smiley campaign, and again, her husband is on screen for 2 seconds, very brief. What's interesting is that the jersey he was wearing in that ad was given to him by the Seattle Seahawks organization. You see, Tiffany Smiley's husband raised the 12th man flag at a Seahawks game. And it was in honor of his military service and sacrifice for our country. As you may know, her husband was blinded while serving our country. And so the jersey he has on is actually a 12th man jersey that was given to him after he raised the Seahawks flag. Again, in honor of his service to our country. And now the Seahawks are coming out and saying in this cease and desist that they need to, that they're prohibited from using this in any manner that may suggest that Smiley is in any way endorsed by or otherwise affiliated with the NFL or the Seahawks. Again, I don't think anybody watching that ad makes that assumption like, oh, the Seahawks must be endorsing Tiffany Smiley's campaign. No, they just see her husband in a jersey. But I have to imagine that there's going to be some veterans who aren't too pleased with the Seahawks going out of their way to try to remove this image of Tiffany Smiley's husband wearing a jersey that the Seahawks gave him because of his service to our country. So now you've got Starbucks, cease and desist to the Tiffany Smiley campaign. You've got the Seahawks, cease and desist to the Tiffany Smiley campaign. But again, I think corporations have every right in the world to preserve their trademark, and if these were trademark violations, then the Tiffany Smiley campaign has to answer for those. But it's the third cease and desist letter that really gets to me. The third cease and desist letter that Smiley got came from lawyers with the Seattle Times. So the Seattle Times sent a cease and desist letter saying that Tiffany Smiley was engaging in unauthorized use of the Seattle Times logo. So the Seattle Times says in the cease and desist letter, the content of the Seattle Times is protected by copyright and trademark and is exclusively property of the Seattle Times. Use of material from the Seattle Times requires the Seattle Times' consent. Under no circumstances, unless expressly licensed by the Seattle Times, may the content be reproduced or imitated, including in advertising material. So they want that clip of their headline to be removed. Now, here's what's weird about this. It is very common in political ads to have them reference news articles, to have a logo of whatever news publication it came from, quote from the article, show the article headline. Incredibly common. You'll see it on political ads all the time. And in fact, if you're familiar with Patty Murray's political ads, you'll have seen it on Patty Murray's political ads. The Smiley campaign, in its response to the Seattle Times, pointed to two ads in particular in 2016 where Patty Murray does the exact same thing that Tiffany Smiley did, using the logo of the Seattle Times. And in fact, in one of these ads, she uses a number of logos from different news agencies. The Washington Post, CNN Politics, The Huffington Post. So again, this is a very common practice. So Tiffany Smiley's campaign comes out and accuses the Seattle Times of illegally using its corporate resources to support the re-election campaign for Senator Patty Murray. She argues, here you have the Times, which has endorsed Patty Murray, and it takes issue with us using their logo, but Patty Murray used it repeatedly in 2016. In response, the Smiley campaign has filed a complaint with the Federal Elections Commission over all of this, saying that what the Times is doing, they claim, violates federal election law and provides what amounts to a corporate in-kind contribution to Patty Murray's campaign. So Tiffany Smiley is suggesting that all of this is some sort of coordinated corporate effort to make sure that Patty Murray wins. Now, I don't think it's coordinated by any stretch. But it is quite interesting that you have Starbucks, the Seahawks, the Seattle Times, all taking issue with these ads at the same time. But I'm less bothered by the Starbucks and the Seahawks opposition. I mean, I think it's a little petty, but I do understand that, you know, if you give an inch, people will take a mile, and they might try to use your brand to try to boost their campaigns. And you could have people engage in really egregious violations and excuse it by pointing to them letting Tiffany Smiley get away with it. So fine. But the Seattle Times one is really concerning to me. It's so common in political advertisements for them to use clips from TV news, and again, clips from articles and show headlines. I've just never heard of an organization doing a cease and desist, a news organization doing a cease and desist of this nature. Now, that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. And that's what I've asked the Seattle Times. Did you, you know, ask Patty Murray back in 2016 to cease and desist? Because those ads are still up all these years later on campaign YouTube. If they do not have a good answer for this, then there's a very serious problem here. So let's see if they do have a good answer. The Times did get back to me. Katie Erwert, who is Senior Vice President of Product Marketing and Public Service, responded to my questions. And I had three questions for the Seattle Times. Is it true that the Times did not ask the Murray camp to remove the Times logo in previous ads? If so, why not? Can you respond to the claims of an improper in-kind contribution? And how does the Times plan to proceed if Smiley will not pull the ad? So Katie Erwert responded to me and said this. I'll read you the statement in full. The Seattle Times permits candidates to use our logos and marks without charge if done so in a non-misleading manner that provides readers and voters accurate information. Ms. Smiley's ad left the mistaken impression the Times has endorsed her campaign, which violates our policy. Her characterization of this as playing favorites to a specific campaign or political party is inaccurate and a misrepresentation. And then they sent me a link to their policies. What really struck me there is them saying that Ms. Smiley's ad left the mistaken impression the Times has endorsed her campaign. Again, and I'll just play back a clip of the ad, I don't see how the ad comes across as the Times endorsing her campaign.
For decades, Patty Murray has spearheaded reckless policies that lead to shortages, inflation, and so much crime that you can't even get a cup of coffee from the hometown shop on Capitol Hill, even if you could still afford it.
So I've followed up with the Seattle Times and asked, what about the use in question gives the impression that the Times has endorsed her campaign? My second follow-up question was the Times comfortable with Patty Murray's usage of the logo in 2016 because it had endorsed her campaign in that race? And I put the two links to the old Patty Murray ads. So those seem like, you know, very legitimate follow-up questions just to kind of clarify some confusion. And the response I got, polite, but not helpful. Thanks, Brandy. We'll decline further comment on this. So I really don't, at this point, have a good explanation from the Times as to why they're taking issue with Tiffany Smiley's use of their logo and not Patty Murray's use of their logo. So anyway, all this is fascinating. Starbucks, I sent them an email as well, kind of asking if it was a little bit petty for them to take such a hard line on this, considering that when you look at, again, that ad, nothing in it screams Starbucks. I mean, for those of us who are aware, we know it's a Starbucks location that's closed down, but you can hardly see the Starbucks sign in the background. And in the Seahawks ad, I mean, we're talking about a war hero. And you gave him that jersey. And now the Seahawks want to go back and say, yeah, but you can't show it for 2 seconds on air, as if it's a big deal. So petty, but whatever. They can do what they want. It's their trademark. The Seattle Times one concerns me, given the fact that there's so much pressure around them to treat candidates fairly. This is just not a good look for the Times. It's Friday. That means it's time for our weekly segment, Florida Report, which takes on a little bit more seriousness. So usually we like to try to have fun, but of course, Hurricane Ian has done some pretty substantial damage to life and to property in Florida. And so we're going to talk about that today. Here's our Florida-based correspondent, my sister Miranda. Are you okay?
Yes. Thankfully, Miami escaped the worst of it. We just got a lot of rain for like 3 days straight, a little bit of storm surge, not too bad. That's pretty normal for rainy days. And then a little breeze, like my trash cans got knocked over a couple times, but we are safe in Miami.
You know, what's really sweet is I, undivided subscribers really were worried about you.
Oh, I love to hear that.
Yeah, there was, so I was at a business meeting yesterday and someone asked, just like stop the meeting, like, is Miranda okay? And then I had a live Q&A with subscribers last night and multiple people were like, hey, how's Miranda? So people were very concerned. I let them know that you were all right. You know, whenever I see, because you've been in Miami for a long time, you've been through some really serious hurricanes. It never ceases to amaze me the people who will not evacuate when they're told to evacuate.
Yeah, it's and I think that if any other state faced this type of natural disaster, you'd see the same type of people. Like you look at California wildfires and you see people who just do not want to leave their homes. And I have to say, I had to evacuate in 2016. I lived on the beach. I lived just two blocks from the sand. And it was my first time in a hurricane as like an adult with things that I cared for. And I think that there's also a lot of skepticism that goes into that too. People just don't think it's gonna be that bad and they are willing to risk it. But there are a lot of Florida people that will stand their ground against a hurricane.
I don't want to get too political about this, but of course, everything is political these days. And there were some more liberal news outlets that were kind of going after Ron DeSantis because, of course, he's asking the federal government for assistance, given the extent of the damage. But, you know, it was mentioned that he himself, when he was a United States representative, had voted against a federal aid package after Hurricane Sandy in 2013. So, of course, liberals are like, oh, now you want help because it's your state. How much are Floridians paying attention to that, the politics of it?
Not at all. And I think that there's so much real world stuff happening that it doesn't matter who's sitting in office. It's their job to help. You know what I mean? Because natural disasters affect everybody, Democrats, Republicans, non-registered voters, children, everybody is affected. So during storms like that, when they hit and they cause this much damage, people need to put their political opinions to the side because we all change through experience. So even if Ron DeSantis voted one way before, and now he's a governor of a state that has just been decimated by a storm, I would expect him to change his opinions a little bit. And like people need to allow for some growth without constantly going back to what a person used to think and used to believe. That's just how I feel about that.
Yeah, apparently he said it was pork laden and that's why he voted against it. He thought there was a lot of unnecessary spending, which I would argue there's a lot of things like that that do have unnecessary spending packed into it. But certainly, you know, I agree. And even if you're going to criticize him for it, like is now the time? You know, when people are, their lives have been absolutely shattered and you're like, well, you didn't want it for Hurricane Sandy after 2013. So how dare you? It just seems like such a waste of breath for the major outlets and the networks to even be bothering with it. I mean, certainly talk about it after the fact. But when it comes to kind of long term, you know, like you said, you've been through a lot of these hurricanes, some worse than others. But how are they characterizing, you know, how long it's going to take to recover from this extent of damage?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, I've heard, I have a couple clients that live over in Fort Myers and they've been posting on social media. And I had one client say, she doesn't think they could fix this in 10 years. That's how bad it is. I mean, you got bridges gone, highways gone, entire neighborhoods flooded and destroyed. Even Hurricane Irma in 2016, that's the one that I was evacuated for. That one wasn't even a major storm. I think it hit us as a 3 and then quickly declined to a 2. It still took the Keys years to clean up. I mean, I go down to the Keys for work a lot and I'd see boats on the side of the road from Hurricane Irma still there a year, 2 years later. So I know that there's priorities, like when it comes to the cleanup, get the power up and running, get the businesses and the schools going, get the infrastructure and the highways going, and then pick up the boats off the side of the road. But like, it takes a long time to clean up. I mean, I think it was months before the beach was clean during Irma. Like you'd go out there and there's just all types of crazy ocean stuff, you know, eels and giant starfish and very cool stuff to look at. But the cleanup effort is long and painstaking. And I don't think any single individual city is even equipped to deal with that kind of stuff by itself. So then you got to wait for assistance to come in from different areas of the state or other parts of the country. So it's a long road for them. I mean, they don't even have official death toll records or anything yet. Like, they're still going like through search and rescue efforts. So I don't even think they're thinking about how much money this is going to cost yet. I think safety is paramount at the moment.
And it is nice to see people who put politics aside. You know, Governor Jay Inslee activated our National Guard to come out there and help. We've done that in the past, you know, with Texas and with wildfires and other states. We've had other states send help here during our wildfires. And so that's what you want to see. You want to see politics completely out of the picture and just get human beings the help that they need. So certainly credit states that are sending help that way. As with any time we see a natural disaster, I mean, obviously it's horrifying, but you also see kind of the best of humanity and the best of people. It's no different here. There's a couple stories that really stood out that you sent me. One of them had to do with citizens jumping into action to help an elderly man who was probably going to be killed.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was stuck in his vehicle and floodwaters were rising. And in the video, they show the floodwaters are like up to the window on the driver's side of the car. And I think it's three or four Good Samaritans go out in rushing, raging floodwaters and save this man from his vehicle. And he's a very elderly man. Like, he looks like he probably needs a walker on a normal day, let alone when you have 6-foot storm surges and rain and wind. And they definitely saved his life. And that's like you said, you get to see some of like the most amazing things about humans come out during these horrible times, you know? There's another story about a guy that went out and saved a cat, and he became like the internet's heartthrob for the week, because any amount of like just empathy and, you know, caring for any life is just, it boosts morale. It gives people something to feel good in such a horrible place. So I love stories like this too. I mean, Florida man, definitely he's getting gold medals right now.
Really quickly on the cat front. Okay, dude, I see what you're doing there. Whenever I see fire departments post like a video and they have a little thing over a cat's mouth that was in a fire and they're getting the cat air and they post, you know, with the nursing a cat back to life, I'm like, okay, yes, you're a hero, but I see what you're doing there. Trying to appeal to the ladies.
It's working. I'm sorry.
Oh, I love that. There's also the without fail. I mean, obviously, I never recommend people go out into the elements for social media clicks or even news reporters. I always hated when they'll send people out in waist deep water. And it's like you're telling people on TV not to do the things that you're actively doing. I can see the storm is bad. I don't need you out there. How can we help? What are some good trusted places if people want to donate to the recovery?
So there is the Red Cross, which is probably one of the most well-known when it comes to natural disasters. The Red Cross also helps like across the border. So that will help you get your, you know, any amount that you can help with can go to like Puerto Rico and Cuba, which are two places that also, you know, are kind of, it's quiet in the news about them right now because Florida is dealing with so much, but that storm hit them right before it hit us. And it did the almost worst damage because those are not like first world countries. So the Red Cross is one. And then Volunteer Florida is another one. Volunteer Florida, those funds will go directly to the families and the businesses affected by the storm here in America and Florida.
Well, our hearts certainly go out to you. Anything you want to say to undivided listeners who were worried about you?
I really appreciate you guys are worried about me. You know, it warmed my heart to know that people cared so much. Miami gets very lucky. We don't get a lot of storms anymore. And, you know, that's something I can be very thankful for, but you know, the rest of the state and the coast where it's heading, I think it's heading to the Carolinas right now. They can use some of your guys' well wishes too. So just keep a, you know, good prayer and a good thought for the people of the Southeast as we finish hurricane season. Cause we've got about 2 months left. So, or maybe about a month left.
As you know, we end our show on Fridays with our segment, Understanding America, reading important texts or documents or laws that help us understand this wonderful country of ours. I've talked a lot on the show lately about how I've just come to believe government is just not going to fix some of these woes that we're facing. I mean, King County, we discussed on the show once, even more money from folks to, I don't know, deal with the homeless crisis that they haven't been able to deal with spending billions of dollars, and Seattle wants more money to try to deal with the homeless situation in parks. And it's like, you want all this money from us, but you haven't proven capable at all of dealing with the homeless crisis or showing us that you have a plan. And so you're just wanting these blank checks for no reason. It's ridiculous. One of our former presidents, who is a big advocate for limited government and the idea that you can get more accomplished if the government just moves out of the way, was Ronald Reagan, of course. And I wanted to read a passage from his first inaugural address delivered January 20th, 1981. And he was talking about why he supports this idea of limited government interference in our lives. He said, patriotic music, please. Okay, thank you. He said, "So there will be no misunderstanding, it is not my intention to do away with government. It is rather to make it work with us, not over us, to stand by our side, not ride our back. Government can and must provide opportunity, not smother it, foster productivity, not stifle it. If we look to the answer as to why, for so many years, we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. It is no coincidence that our present troubles parallel and are proportionate to the intervention and intrusion in our lives that result from unnecessary and excessive growth of government. It is time for us to realize that we are too great a nation to limit ourselves to small dreams. We are not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing. So with all the creative energy at our command, let us begin an era of national renewal. Let us renew our determination, our courage, and our strength, and let us renew our faith and our hope." Those are the words of Ronald Reagan in his first inaugural address. And that is this Friday's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give Common Sense a comeback. If you have not become a subscriber already, we do 3 episodes a week, a bonus episode for subscribers, and send out our Undivided newsletter every week to let you know what you may have missed from the show. So you can become an Undivided subscriber in 2 ways, patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.